560 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia. The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. Mark, what do we have this week in recovery news?
So with nearly 200 sites operating in more than a dozen countries, safe injection sites remain controversial in the USA. There are two sites currently that opened in New York City in 2021 in both Manhattan and Harlem. They're currently looking at some of the numbers from these sites and what has been going on. And what they found is they have had 2,300 participants use its services 50,000 times since then. There have been 700 overdoses that were intervened on and stopped with zero deaths at this time. And, you know, the people that are doing this are really hoping that other cities will pick up on this and start offering safe injection sites, just like in many other countries.
Well, you know, that's very encouraging news. The numbers don't lie. I'm just wondering, are they legal in the United States?
So I don't know. You know, I guess it depends on jurisdiction, because remember there was some laws about addicts congregate. There's all kinds stuff that throws some blur in the water. But there's no question that we need these right now.
Well,
Gary,
you know, everybody, I think, would agree we need them. But then they say, but not in my neighborhood. That's the problem.
Yes. Yes. I mean, even myself, if it was right around the corner, you could see how you would think, is there going to be increased crime around, increased drug sales? It makes a lot of sense why it's controversial.
Right. Well, hopefully people will come around and see that the benefits outweigh the negative parts of this thing. What else you have?
So another study came out which says legalizing marijuana does not raise drug and alcohol abuse. And this came out of University of Colorado and University of Mississippi. And according to the study, an adult living in a state with marijuana is no more likely to develop an SUD disorder. They based this on twin studies where they had 4,000 twins in a long-term study, and they found no increase in drug abuse in the states that were legal compared to ones that weren't. What they did find, though, is more use of marijuana.
Yeah. Guess what? I don't believe that whole case study, right? I just don't believe it. I just don't believe it, Mark.
Well, and it's missing a big thing, okay? And
juveniles.
Anytime they're using it, it's abuse. I'm not seeing the numbers of the juveniles that are doing it, because according to most people I know, they're doing it all over the high schools now. Their parents are getting cards. They're getting their parents' supplies. You know, this isn't taking into account juveniles, right?
Yeah, no, it absolutely isn't. So, look, I guess we don't really know. It sounds fishy to me, but I would think that with the legalization, people that wouldn't normally use it at least would be curious and want to try it. And then once you try it, you like it, it feels good, and you keep going. That would be my take on this. Maybe I'm wrong.
Common sense.
All right, we're gonna take our first break. And here's a question: have you ever robbed a bank, Mark?
I have not.
Have you ever been shot multiple times?
No, I haven't.
Have you ever been in prison for years?
No.
Well, when we come back, our special guest, Nolan Burchette will give us the whole rundown of what his life was and what it's like today, because it's amazing. We'll be back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we're also heard on these great stations, WGAC, Augusta, Georgia, WHFS, Tampa, Florida, and the big talker, WWWE, Atlanta, Georgia. Everybody, welcome to the show. And I got to say, before we bring Nolan on, and Mark, I know you'll agree, we have done almost 500 interviews, and this guy that's coming on now is one of our favorites.
He absolutely is, and we were just talking a couple weeks ago. We're like, we have to get Nolan back on. It's been a little while. He's our good friend from the West Coast.
Absolutely.
And welcome, Nolan. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
You sound so calm and such serene. A nice guy and serene. And let's get into it. Let's really get into it now, okay, Nolan? Because we got a lot of people watching, and when we posted this last night, you know, your story is so amazing. We got a big audience today. So let's talk about where you grew up. What was your childhood like? Let's start there.
Sure. Growing up, I had two parents that were really supportive, two brothers. All of us were good kids. We're kind of spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
Both of my parents, they're still alive. They're still married.
Great.
So growing up was an easy childhood. You know, they kind of spoiled us a little bit, and we played sports. I think the trouble didn't really start for me until I was about 14, 15. Started getting into dad's liquor cabinet here and there. Then experimented with marijuana. But all throughout high school, I did well in school and played sports. Didn't really have any legal issues or anything until a little later. But yeah, growing up was an ideal childhood.
And so you had a lot of friends. Were you a good student? Did you care about school? I don't even know what these questions have to do with what we're going to get into, but – you know, I think people want to know – they saw the headlines, but they want to know you better. So that's why Mark and I are asking you these questions, you know?
Sure. Well, I think they're good questions.
Yeah.
Because it just goes to show that addiction and, you know, drug abuse can affect anybody. It's not always, you know, a certain walk of life or a socioeconomic status that takes us to drug use. I mean, like today we have – all walks of life that come through our program here at Touchstone. So that I think it's a good question.
So, so were you working? Okay, did you graduate high school?
I did. Yeah, I did well throughout high school. Got good grades. My senior year is when I really started using marijuana heavily. So grades slipped a little bit, but I ended up graduating and going to a San Diego State. Out of high school.
Wow. And were you working in a family business at that point?
No, not yet. I started working for my dad part-time during the summers when I was 19, inspecting produce all around California.
Right. What kind of business did your dad have? What was it? Tell us about it.
It's a produce export business.
Uh-huh.
So he'd buy the fruits, mostly grapes, but tree fruit as well. Here in California and ship it all over Asia.
Right.
So I was inspecting the produce before we would ship it.
Yeah, and so you said that it started with marijuana for you. Was this something where you started using here and there and it quickly became like an everyday thing? Were you really abusing marijuana at that point?
Yeah. I mean, like you said before I came on, as a kid, I shouldn't have been using it at all. And I know it can really affect your the way your brain develops when you use it at a young age.
So, Nolan, do you think it's
I was using it all the time.
So, in your view, is marijuana a gateway?
Yes.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Primes the brain.
It does, especially at a young age.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no question in my mind.
Yeah, it's interesting. So this I don't want to get into the legalization part, but it's complicated and it's not as clear cut as everybody thinks it is, and it's going to cause a lot of problems in the years to come.
And it's not a vitamin.
It's not a vitamin. All right. So you go through college, and you're anything else besides marijuana you're using?
Yeah. So in college, I quickly got into some street drugs. You know, I was using alcohol pretty much every day, and then started using cocaine, and I mean, you name it, I tried it my freshman year of college. Right. Ended up getting into some trouble, got kicked out of San Diego State basically, and moved up to Fresno State, and then got a DUI shortly thereafter. But yeah, all through college I was using all kinds of things.
Yeah. And do you think if you never picked up marijuana, you would have used everything? You would have gone directly to cocaine or whatever?
I doubt it. You know, I think it kind of desensitized me.
Yeah.
And I was using marijuana all the time, and that kind of got boring. And then I was willing to try something else. But, yeah, I mean, that's a hard question to answer. But I don't think I would have tried it.
Okay. Hey, listen, I just want to say, if you're just joining us now, we are talking with Nolan Burchett, who's a friend of the show. He's been on many times. And the incredible story of robbing banks and being shot and going to prison and then becoming this incredible executive director of Touchstone Recovery Centers in California. The story is just so amazing, Nolan. And, you know, when they say somebody does a 180, holy mackerel, 180 in the dictionary, your face is next to it. I can tell you that. You know what I mean? Just amazing. Okay. So, and I also want to mention, if you want to give us a call and talk to Nolan and ask him questions, this is really a rare opportunity. 1-888-728-9941. That's 1-888-728-9941. Okay, so you're graduated college. You're being, you know, I guess a regular kid, you know, trying stuff out.
Had a DUI.
DUI, okay. Now, how does this escalate into desperation?
Sure. So I think I knew pretty early on I had an addictive personality. You know, I would dive into things, whether it was something productive or something that was bad for me. And I really got out of hand when I started using opiates.
Okay.
When I was about a senior in college, I was about 22 or 3. A friend of mine let me try OxyContin, which back in 2002, 2003 was like the fentanyl of those days.
Okay.
So I got addicted to it pretty quickly, and things escalated pretty quickly, and I ended up in treatment, actually. So I went to treatment for 28 days, got out, and then quickly joined the Marine Corps. It was the stigma of being an addict. I was kind of embarrassed about it, and so I ran off. I figured being a Marine would solve all those problems. It didn't. I kept drinking while I was in the Marines, and then right after I discharged, got right back into opiates.
How long were you in the Marines for?
Just about 5 years.
You had an honorable discharge?
Yeah.
Never an issue while you were in the service?
No, I mean, I got myself into some trouble here and there.
Yeah.
Where were you?
I was just drinking out of hand.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Where were you stationed?
At first, Fort Leonard Wood for training, and then came back to Camp Pendleton, and then ended up at a Fresno. There's a reservist base here in Fresno.
Wow, it's incredible. Hey, you know, we have a caller on the line this early in the show. Caller, are you there? Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio.
Hi, I'm here. Is there a playback? I can hear myself talk.
Well, that would be on your phone.
All right. Okay, so I'm all right. You can hear me. Okay. Hi, Nolan. My name's Sophia. I'm actually Gary's daughter, and I'm calling in because I wanted to tell you that your story is a story that is so powerful, and it really is so interesting and fascinating. And I wanted to ask you a question. If it's too personal, that's okay. What was going through your, because I know the story, I'm not going to say anything, but what was going through your mind, right before everything kind of came to a halt? And, do you remember?
Do you mean, before I committed the first crime that I, or
yeah,
do you mean,
I don't want to give too much away, because I know you haven't said the whole story yet.
Sure. Well, I guess to answer your question is, I was just really desperate. And then I wasn't really obviously thinking about consequences. You know, if that was the farthest thing from my mind, really what I was thinking about was maintaining my addiction, because as all of us know, opiate withdrawal is just, it's horrific. I was embarrassed as well, because, you know, like I said earlier, I'd already been to treatment. So I thought, you know, I didn't want to ask for help again. I didn't want to admit to my family and friends that I had failed and that I was using again. So I was just desperate to not let people know that I needed help again. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think that you are. I got to say, I don't really ever say I have a favorite on the show, but you're my favorite story, and if anyone's listening, listen to the end, because the story's really, really, really
well. Thank you, Sophie. That's a great call.
Thank you, Sophia.
I hope things are good out there.
Yep. Be well.
All right.
Be
Thanks,
well.
Everyone. Have a good weekend.
You too.
You know, I think she makes a good point. His story. The reason we are broadcasting his story, because if some one person hears this, and it flips them in some way, Nolan's all that stuff was not for nothing.
And you know, you can hear it about this desperation of being hooked on opioids. You know, and when was the first time, Nolan, that you realized that, like, man, if I don't use, I'm getting sick? Did you know right away it was? Because I've had some people say that they thought they got the flu at first, and then somebody pointed out that they were in withdrawal. When was the first time you noticed that?
It was only a couple weeks after I started using. You know, at first it was like every couple days. And then, very quickly, by the end of the first week, it became a daily habit where I had to have one of those pills. And then as soon as I'd run out, I mean, it wouldn't take hours. It would be as soon as I didn't have any left, that became like the only thing I can think about. So if I had to work, I wasn't going to work. If I had a date with whoever I was dating at the time, that got canceled, because, you know, my priorities would switch up really quickly. So, I knew right away. I knew right away that I was hooked, because it wasn't like I started feeling sick right away. I started getting I'd panic, and I'd feel like, oh, man, I got to get some more.
Mm-hmm.
And then the withdrawal symptoms would kick in shortly thereafter.
You know, it's so amazing. You know, I was addicted to a drug called Quaalude, but it was nothing like, you know, you're going to get hooked on within a week. That is so frightening. And, you know, for anybody listening or watching, just listen to that. After a week, your life will change.
Yeah, and I bet it quickly turned to crushing and using them in other ways. Right? Is that what happened, Nolan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pretty much right off the bat. And especially, back then, I don't even think I think you can still get those Oxycontins, but I'm really not sure if I mean, usually when people come in with an opiate addiction, they're using another form of it, whether it's, you know, a Norco or a fentanyl or heroin. But back then they had these time release covers on those, on Oxycontin. So you'd have to wash it off and then crush it up in order for it to work immediately. So yeah, it was like immediately we were, I wasn't using it as directed. It's not like I was popping it one pill at a time. We were crushing them up.
Dolan, besides crushing it and whatever else you do with it, smoked it, whatever, did your life start to change? Did you start to lie more? Did you start to cheat more? Did you steal more? You know, all that stuff is part of the deal, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think that's one of the best things about, like, being in recovery and knowing that I don't have to remember some BS story I told my mom yesterday. And I don't have to – like, keeping all those lies straight was so exhausting.
Oh,
and,
man.
I mean, you get caught over and over, and it was just – it was pathetic, really. And then, you know, that's something that I tell the clients these days is, you know, you be proud that you're able to be honest now. And then that's one of the biggest warning signs is when somebody starts getting caught in these little lies that really aren't necessary. You know, that's always a big red flag that somebody's using again.
Yeah, it's the desperation, the thought of you could take something that you thought was going to make you feel good for a while, and then all of a sudden it's got you. It takes over. And if any of our listeners think they're immune to that or whatever, listen, all our brains are pretty much the same and our bodies work the same way. And you start on opioids, it is not going to be a good ending.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about it is, you know, when it comes to genetics, you always hear about this genetic predisposition. But as a counselor, I've seen a ton of people that I could not find addiction in their family, you know, and they had full-blown opioid addictions, which is scary, don't you think, Nolan?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think, I mean, I have the most experience, at least personally, with opiates. And I mean, I don't care if you have an addictive personality or not, or if you're predisposed to addiction. I think you start taking those things, even as prescribed by a doctor, and you're going to get addicted to them. So it's they're just really, really dangerous, in my opinion. And I know they are medically necessary for some people with chronic pain. But, you know, when they do have to stop taking them, you know, it's not easy. And it's definitely a process.
If you're just watching us now, listening to us, you want to watch, go to Clean and Sober page, Clean and Sober Radio on Facebook, and you can watch us do the show like some of these folks. So I want to mention Judge Christopher Maddox. Happy Friday, and happy Friday to you, Judge, also. Kathy Wolf Collin is today celebrating 25 years of sobriety.
Amazing.
Amazing. Hey, Kathy, that's what it's all about. Nolan, you know this woman, Kelly Irwin Burchette, is watching? I don't know if you know her.
Oh, yeah, I met her.
You met her. Laura Story, congratulations to Kathy. Ricky Trevon is watching. Robert Brandis is watching. Richard Carrere is watching. Linda Carroll. Laurie Kogan Wernick is watching. We'll get to everybody else. There's a long list on here, but I think it's a compliment and a tribute to you that people are interested on knowing that you can be a badass and then you can come around and do some wonderful things. We're going to take a break right now, and we're going to be back with Nolan, and we're going to find out what it's like to rob a bank. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Diversity in the workplace is more than gender, ethnicity, and even age. It also means people in recovery. The Higher Calling Foundation works to end the stigma of substance use disorders in the workplace by helping those in recovery find jobs, get career counseling, and more. All things insurance doesn't cover, and all at no cost. And encouraging businesses to hire employees in recovery. Because with the Great Resignation, there are jobs to be filled, and employees in recovery are an untapped demographic. It's mutually beneficial, and it's simply good business. Started by employment attorney in recovery Kevin Heyer, the Higher Calling Foundation believes everyone deserves a second chance and works to make that happen. And now, diversity in the workplace demands it. Visit HireCalling.org. That's HYER Calling.org. and find out how we can help you.
Hi, this is Randy the Blade Lurch. I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're just joining us now, we're talking to Nolan Burchett, who the end of the story is quite incredibly incredible, and so is the story we're going to talk about now. Nolan, let's get into the crime, which Mark is biting at the bit to get into this. Actually, so am I. All right. You're in a desperate place, man, and you're now you're the crazy thoughts are seeping into your head, and you're going to do anything now to either to get out of your misery or get money or whatever. What made you decide that a bank was the place to go to?
Yeah, so, I mean, like we just talked about, you know, the lies had built up, and all I really needed to do at that point was go to my parents or go to a friend of mine that cared about me and say, hey, I'm hooked on these damn pills again. Excuse my language. I'm hooked on these pills again, and I need help. I need to go to detox. I need out of this bind. But instead, you know, I just doubled down on the lies, and I would borrow money from my in-laws, and I'd borrow money from my parents, or I'd borrow money from my brother, you know, anybody that cared about me. Those were the ones that got manipulated, you know, and that's, I see that all the time these days, where the ones that are closest to us are the ones that get treated the worst.
When you said in-laws, were you married to Kelly at that point?
No, I wasn't. I was married, and at that point, and that marriage dissolved when I got the handcuffs put on me.
Obviously. Okay. All right. Keep going.
So yeah. So I was, you know, I had dug myself in this financial bind. I was strung out on opiates. I was embarrassed, and I made a desperate and stupid decision to try to cover my tracks. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really a plan to get rich or to, you know, to move down to Mexico and you know, live in luxury or anything like that. I was just trying to pay off my debts and then get another bag of those pills that were keeping me well. So at first I was just thinking of ways out of the crisis I'd put myself in. And that was one of the things that came to mind. It was, I had a friend in high school that worked at a bank, and she had told me that, she had told me some things that led me to this decision. And it was, you know, it was a stupid decision. I don't want to repeat what she said.
Sure.
I don't want to give anyone out there.
No.
But so I, you know, I decided to write a note and to walk into a bank and cover my identity and then pass the note to the teller. And I did it.
All right. So you get to the bank, you get out of your car, you're out of your Jeep, I believe it was. And
that was the last, yeah.
Okay. What was it like how many banks did you rob?
Three.
Okay. The first bank, when you put your hands at the door to pull it open, was it blank? Was your head like blank?
No. So the first time I tried it, and I think I've told you this, maybe not, but the first time I tried it, I walked up to the bank, and my nerves like got a hold of me, and my stomach started bubbling, and I threw up all over the ground right in front of the door.
Right.
And I turned around and walked away.
So
a couple more weeks went by, and then I was desperate and stupid enough to try it again, and I did it. Walking in there was like an out of body experience. I mean, I know that sounds stupid, but
no, it doesn't.
I just kind of strolled in and couldn't believe what I was doing, and I did it. And then I took off running and got in the vehicle and drove off, and I know I got away with it. And that was, you know, probably one of the worst things that happened to me, because I got away with it, and I decided, you know, in a few more weeks, when I was in the same situation that I had just been in, I did it again.
Wasn't law enforcement like watching for you now? I mean, you hit two banks. I'm assuming it was in close proximity of each other. And
yeah, they were in the same county. same, you know, same MO and all that stuff. I did the same thing every time. It was just I covered my identity. You know, I didn't have a criminal background. I had a job that paid really well, and I was going to work every day. I was, you know, there was no real reason for them to be watching me. So I figured I was scot-free. And then, it would have been a matter of time for they would have got me. But they, you know, I just kept doing it. So that's how they got me.
How much money did you get all told? Did you get anything?
I mean, no, not really. Because in the end, I ended up having to pay it all back in restitution.
Yeah.
You know, I got a bunch of bullet holes and some years in prison is what I got.
Question for you, Nolan. Two questions. One of them is, like, when you walked into these banks, like, how did the teller react? And the other question I have is, was there complete paranoia? I'm just picturing robbing a bank and the next day going to, like, Wawa and stuff and being like, are people going to, like, is the cops going to bust me right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I should have been thinking that way. Yeah, I should have, but I didn't. I kind of just pretended it never happened, and I put it out of mind, and I just went about my day. And
wow.
Then, I don't know why I was so naive, and it was really dumb because I know they, after getting arrested and talking to the detectives and finding out all the information they had, they could have done that at any moment. Like they were right on my tail. They knew it was someone like me. They were probably zeroing in because of the vehicles I used. You know, they were all registered to either me or my family. So it wasn't like I was going to get away with it. But, you know, I was too busy taking my pills and pretending it didn't happen.
Well, don't worry about that. I'm assuming when you went to each of these three places, banks, you were high, weren't you?
Yeah, either that or getting sick.
Or getting, you know, sick.
That was the way my life was then. I was either sick or I was, you know, running out of pills.
So the third bank that you hit, they started chasing you, right? What happened?
Yep.
What was that? Tell our audience, how'd that play out?
So the third time, there was a CDC sergeant. CDC's California Department of Correction.
Yeah.
So there's a CDC sergeant in the drive-through teller window. I was inside, and then so he saw the whole thing that was happening. And I know all this from the police report, but he saw what was going on inside. And so when I took off running, he followed me. So I ran down a one-way street the wrong way. He followed. I didn't know he was doing that. And then I jumped in the Jeep and I took off. And then I noticed a vehicle following me that last, you know, maybe a mile away. I noticed that there was this car that was still behind me. So I took four rights and he took four rights. And then I knew he was following me. So then I hit the gas and I was driving through Tulare, California, like 90 miles an hour through residential neighborhoods, I don't know if I went through a school zone, but I probably would have if there was one that was in my path. And I total disregard for anybody, you know, I was just panicked. And I thank God I didn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
So then I end up 10 miles away in Visalia. He stopped chasing me. I thought I had gotten away, but I guess the 911 dispatch he was on the phone with told him, quit chasing him. You know, you guys are going to kill somebody. So he stopped chasing me, and then I got about a quarter mile away from my house, so my destination, and then an unmarked car pulled up behind me. I could tell it was a cop because it had the lights behind the driver's glass, you know, behind the windshield. I can see the lights.
Oh, yeah.
And then I saw him on a radio. So then I thought, oh, maybe it's a coincidence, but no, it wasn't. And a white Tahoe with lights on top pulled up behind him, and then they turned on their lights. So I looked back at him, and reality started to set in, like what I had done but the trouble I was in. And like I said, I had never been in trouble before like that. You know, I've gotten a DUI, but other than that, I didn't know what jail was like, or, you know, getting arrested was like. I thought I'd do 20 to 30 years in prison. I didn't know. So then I looked back at the cop and told him, I just mouthed it. And I said, I'm not stopping. And I took my seatbelt off, and then I hit the gas.
Oh.
And at that point, the cop started chasing me. My goal was to check out. You know, I kind of figured in that moment, my best option was just to check out and to stop living, because I didn't really know what the future looked like, but I knew at that point I thought it would be horrible. I figured I'd be locked up the rest of my life. So I hit the gas and I looked for a telephone pole. Mm-hmm. I found one about maybe a mile down the road with like a dirt lot behind it. So I accelerated through it, and then the telephone pole sheared when I ran into it. So meaning like it swung on the lines.
Yeah.
So I went right through it essentially. And then the Jeep spun out, and I ended up in this cloud of dust. When I came to, because my head had hit the windshield, and I ended up in the passenger seat. So when I came to, you know, I was kind of dazed, and I heard guys yelling, get your hands up or something like that. I don't know really what they were yelling at me, but I'm assuming that's what it was. And then so I realized, well, that didn't work. So I got out of the vehicle and saw an officer with his gun pointed at me. So, and I didn't know there was another one behind me as well. But he, you know, both of them were probably 15, 20 feet away from me. And then so I motioned to my waist, like I was going for a weapon, which I didn't have, but I motioned to my waist and they unloaded on me. So they ended up shooting 18 shots, 7 of them hit me. And then, that was the end of that day.
What does it feel like to be shot? I mean, I'm sure nobody listening to this show has ever been shot. What does that feel like?
Yeah.
Do you feel it?
Yeah, oh yeah, I felt it. It felt like a sledgehammer hit me in the chest, because a couple of them got me like close to my heart. I think there's four of them in like my upper left torso area. So those, I don't know which one. I'm assuming the one right by my heart, but there was one that it felt like a sledgehammer hit me, and it spun me around a little bit, and then I fell down. I ended up getting, you know, like I said, 7 times, one in the knee, one in the, like in the back, both of my lungs were punctured. So it was a rough day.
Wow.
It didn't feel good.
You are, you're a very lucky guy. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but so this was basically 10 years ago. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah. About 10 years ago.
So Nolan, first question is, are you tired of telling that story? And two, when you think about it, it was a different person. And does it feel like you're reliving a movie, a bad movie? I mean, when you think back on it, what do you feel?
I think the only time I really tell it is to you, Gary.
And to Mark. And to Mark.
We always want to hear it. I mean.
Yeah. But no, I'm.
That is funny, man. That is really funny.
It's still emotional.
Sure.
You know, it's still like hard to talk about. But I mean, I figure I lived for a reason, you know, and I don't know. It took a while to kind of figure out what path I'd take from that point forward. And I'm, you know, I'm glad I didn't give up that day, that's exactly what I did, is I gave up. I took a kind of a chicken way out of things. I shouldn't have chosen to do that, you know, but I made a lot of mistakes.
How did you tell your parents, or did they already know because of the news?
Oh no, I didn't get to talk to my parents for weeks, maybe months. You know, I was in custody at that point. I was awake after I got shot for about an hour, hour and a half, and before I passed out. And when I passed out, they were operating. And then I woke up in the hospital, handcuffed to a bed.
Yeah.
And one of the officers sitting in the room with me was a guy I'd grown up with.
So
he looked at me and, I asked him if I can call anybody. They said no. So I know, in hindsight, after talking to my mom, like what they were going through was not fun. They wouldn't tell them much. They just knew I'd been shot. They knew that I was arrested. I was in critical condition. So, my mom and dad, they were probably going through hell.
Well, there's no question. I think about during my addiction and all the criminal activities, I never, ever once considered my parents' feelings during the whole thing. Never.
Yeah.
Right?
I can relate.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Now it makes me sick.
Well, of course, we have kids now. I mean, you have two beautiful kids, a beautiful wife, and it does make a difference, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, big difference.
So let's I want to run through some more people that are watching. We'll take a break in a little bit, and then we're going to get to your incredible life now, and because it is incredible. So 1-888-728-9941. If you want to give us a call and jump into this, great conversation we're having. If you would like to watch us do it, again, go to Facebook, to Clean and Sober Radio, and you can watch us do the show like this, like these people. Steve Sussman, hello from Palm Beach, Florida. Lisa Quinn is watching. Rodney Gordon is watching. All right, guys, you're watching. Why don't you give us a call? All right.
Don't say the chicken thing.
All right. Okay. I'm not going to say they're chickens if they don't call, Mark. Okay.
All right. It kind of spooks them, I think.
It spooks them. Right? It spooks them. So, yeah, I mean, this is just a great story. What I'm going to do is I would like to just before the break, Touchstone Recovery Center believes in a comprehensive, individualized, and evidence-based approach in working with substance abuse and mental health disorders. The philosophy promotes personal growth and development, utilizing a person-centered approach to treatment, and long-term success includes integration of the family system and an alumni group. It's important to bring all these together. And I'm talking about Touchstone Recovery Center because our guest, Nolan Burchett, who everybody heard what he has come from, is the executive director of this facility. And if this doesn't show that we can and do get better and we can do great things, I don't know what does.
And it just shows that, like, you're here for such a reason, right? Because who survived 7 gunshot wounds from the police at close range?
Right. And, let's jump in before the break. I know I'm jumping all around. You were sentenced. What were your charges? And where did you go for the years in prison?
Sure. So I got 6 counts of second-degree robbery, and that's because I didn't use a weapon, which are all considered violent felony charges. So 6 strikes on my first arrest, and then 2 counts of resisting and 1 count of evading. So 9 felony charges. They ran a lot of them concurrent.
Right.
So I ended up. They took it easy on me because I'd never been in trouble before.
Mm-hmm.
So I got 6 years, which was about half of what my lawyer said, or my public defender said that I should expect.
So back in 2013, did they consider addiction part of the problem?
Yeah, they did actually. They one of the judges that I had seen offered for me to go to Delancey Street, which is a program up in, they have one in the Bay Area in San Francisco and they have one in LA. And the DA wasn't very happy about that. So I actually interviewed with Delancey Street and they denied me. So instead of going to prison, I almost got to do 2 years at a program.
Wow.
But I'm really glad, I gotta be honest. I mean, I'm glad that didn't happen because it took a long time for being in there. And I mean, being in prison for that long, it changed the way that I think about life. It changed a lot of things. And I'm like, looking back, it was the best thing that could have happened to me. And I know that's not true for a lot of people. I mean, prison's a rough place, and it's violent, and it's gang, I mean, just run by gangs, and it's racist, and there's all kinds of problems with prison. But for me, that's what it took. And I mean, as evidenced by my life today, like I can't discount it. It was exactly what I needed.
Wow, incredible. We're going to take a break now. And Nolan, when we come back, let's talk about your new founding career.
All right.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hi, I'm Billy J. Kramer, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
You know, when you talk about redemption and you talk about doing great things after a horrible situation in your life, our guest, Nolan Burchett, is the poster boy, but the poster man for this kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Bank robbery to recovery. I mean, amazing.
So, all right, you get out of prison. And what year did you get out? In 18 or something, or 19?
Yeah, 2018. Before I'd gotten out, I had started going to school to be a drug and alcohol counselor while I was incarcerated. There was a couple programs at the prison I was at that allowed you to go back to college. It's, you know, community college would actually go in inside the prison where the professor would come in and teach a class. It was a process to get on the list and to be able to do that. But you know, I was patient. I didn't have much else going on. So I got on the list, and then whenever I was able, I started going back to school. So while I was incarcerated, I was going to college classes, and then I had it set up through there's an organization here in California called, it might be out of California as well, but I know it's here. It's called Project Rebound, that helps formerly incarcerated men and women get into to college. So they had helped me set it up while I was still incarcerated. And then the day I got out, I knew that I was already accepted and going to California State in Bakersfield, so CSUB. So I got out in July, and in August I was sitting in a college class going to school, wow. Which is pretty cool, you know. And I knew, like, the recidivism rate is just atrocious.
Yeah.
You know, most people are going right back to prison within 90 days, sometimes a year, but I mean, it's the percentage is ridiculous. So I didn't expect that would happen to me, but I knew that, you know, statistically I needed to do something positive. I needed to stay busy and continue down the path that I'd already started on. So I ended up at Cal State Bakersfield, taking psychology classes. I had started working while I was going to college, like, you know, trying to earn some money. I was renovating houses and putting up Christmas lights. I mean, you name it. I couldn't get a job anywhere because of my record.
Sure.
So while I was going to school, you know, I just had to make ends meet somehow, and I figured it out. But I was taking the bus. This is 5 years ago now, and I was taking the bus every day to college. You know, I couldn't afford an Uber. I figured it out, you know, and I was doing what I had to do to continue down that path. And then I went to school for a couple years. While I was in school, I was applying for all the jobs I could. I couldn't get any. And then one day I started talking to a friend of mine from high school that has a similar story, but loosely similar. You know, he had struggled with drugs and alcohol for years and ended up working in business development at a treatment facility. And he was doing really well. And he connected me with Northbound. That's who I was working for when we first started talking.
Yes.
And so he connected me with Northbound. They gave me a shot, and I started working in business development at Northbound Treatment Centers. And, the rest is kind of history, but I stayed in this field the entire time since that point. Moved up to, or stopped working for Northbound after about a year, because I got offered a job as an executive director at another treatment facility called Aspire, I couldn't believe that I got that job offer. I thought, wait, what's the title? You know, and then, I did really well there. And I hired the first person I hired when I had that position was a friend of mine that I had met in prison. And he was actually played a key role in helping me get sober. And had that sponsor role. He's not a 12 stepper like I am, but he was like just a person that I could talk to and rely on. He always gave me good advice, and he doesn't use drugs or alcohol anymore. He used to, but he doesn't anymore. His name's Lewis. So I hired Lewis at Aspire, and he moved up to Fresno with his family. And about 8-9 months later, I got offered the job. Actually, I think my timeline's a little off. It was a little longer than that, but I got offered the job here at Touchstone, and now been here over 2 years.
And you're the executive director.
Lewis is with me too. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, the struggle that you had to get a job because of your criminal background. Do you keep that at the forefront when you're hiring people now, Nolan? Do you cut them slack, and do you understand that, you know, we all need a second chance?
Of course. And I think, you know, especially in this field, you know, there's the vast majority of people with the substance use problem, with a substance use disorder, they have some type of story of incarceration, whether it's, you know, the drunk tank multiple times or DUIs or something as extreme as mine. A lot of us that struggle with addiction, we have some type of record.
Yeah.
Right. And I know that coming back from that can be difficult. I know that firsthand. So, yeah, of course. I think here at least at Touchstone, most, I'd say over 90% of our employees would say that they're in recovery.
That's fantastic. And you have a beautiful family. We know you have two gorgeous kids, a beautiful wife. And, you know, it's the whole story is amazing. From where you come to where you are now, they should make a movie about you. You know that? and we have the title. We thought about it before the show. The title is
From Robbery to Recovery.
From Robbery to Recovery.
You think it should probably be Brad Pitt that plays me, I think.
There you go.
Well, that would be a step down, man. You know what I'm saying? Hey, listen, thank you so much for whoa, thank you, Mark. We have a caller. Kim Burchett is on the line.
Oh, that's my mama.
Oh, that's your mom. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hi, mama.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
We're Nolan's fans.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan too. Well, and I just wanted to say that I can tell as he's talking that it gets more emotional the more years that go on.
Sure.
Because he can't really believe that he did what he did.
Yeah, well, you know, he did what he did, but let's focus on look what he's doing now.
That's right. That's right.
You know?
It's awesome.
So, it's so nice that your mother is on the phone. That's beautiful. We are such big fans of your son, I can tell you that.
And you must be so proud of him.
I am. I'm proud of all three of them, actually.
All right.
Nolan had a bigger journey.
That's right.
So my mom came to visit me almost every weekend, but every other week at least for that entire 5 years.
Wow.
She'd drive up and visit me.
Wow.
It was, thanks, Mom. Love you.
Oh.
You too.
Whoa. All right, guys. Before we all break up here, we're tearing. Thank you so much, Nolan. And thank you, Mama, for coming on the show, too. And have a great weekend. And we just love you guys.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure being on.
Take care.
See you, Nolan.
See ya.
Thank you.
Thank you. What a great story. What a great story. I want to – two people have been waiting, Billy Pfeiffer and Bill Stahl and Ray Parzyk from Jacksonville, Florida. Mike Burke also is on here. What a great show. Remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Mark Sigmund.
Thanks for listening. And to learn more about our broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.